like to welcome you to the Harris & Harris Wealth Finance and Stilettos teleconference series. My name is Zenelia Harris, certified financial planner and president of Harris & Harris Wealth Management Group, a firm focused on the financial success of professional women who are going through various life transitions. The Finance and Stilettos teleconference series highlights dynamic and powerful women of influence whose stories I feel should be shared to motivate, encourage, and enlighten women professionals and women business owners so they can make healthier professional and financial decisions. My guest today is Amira Adams. She is the Director of Participant Services at RTD Financial Advisors, Inc. She works directly with plan sponsors, offering support with plan administration, acting as a liaison between other plan providers, and customizing education programs to deliver to their employees. She's dedicated to helping others and is passionate about the retirement plan industry. Amira has earned the Chartered Retirement Plan Specialist, the Professional Plan Consultant Certification, as well as the Certified Plan Fiduciary Advisor. She has her degree in business administration. She's a native of Brooklyn, New York, now resides with her two sons in Delaware County, Pennsylvania. She enjoyed spending time with family and friends, traveling, and watching classic films. Welcome, Amira.
Thank you, Zenelia. Thank you for having me here today.
Well, I want to start with you sharing a little bit about you and how you became attracted to the financial industry.
Thank you so much. It's really funny that when you say share about you, I can go on and on and on because it's definitely a story to tell. So as far as what got me into the finance industry, I'll say that that started in my early childhood. I remember going to school in Manhattan. I went to school on the Upper East Side, and I remember we were in elementary school. I might have been no more than 8 years old, and we played the stock market game. For the New York Times, okay? And
okay.
Our team made it to number one on the list. These were all of the schools in New York City, and I was so excited. We were picking stocks, and I think that's where my passion for the finance industry began.
Wow.
Funny thing is that I went to school and didn't know what I wanted to do as I became an adult. So
okay.
I kind of strayed from that idea, but I guess it was always in me, and I went into the United States Air Force, and I became an air traffic controller, completely different from the finance.
Yes,
industry,
very
right?
much so,
and
right.
Not so much.
Okay, okay, okay.
I'll tell
okay.
you why.
Okay.
I ended up cross-training into financial management while I was in the Air Force, so I finally got myself back to where I wanted to be. And so we have this joke, you know, you're conducting planes and traffic and keeping people from crashing. It's all the same thing.
Yes, I see the correlation.
There is. There is some correlation there. But I think that that's where it began. That's what drew me to it. And mostly because finances are a very, very critical part of everyone's lives. You know, no matter where you're from, no matter how much you earn, some of us feel, oh, well, I don't need to know about, you know, these concepts or these things, but I've learned that there's so much that each and every one of us needs to know to feel in charge of that
mm-hmm.
area. So that right there is just having a passion and helping people understand that, I think, is what draws me even more into this industry.
Wow,
so,
yes.
Right, and so what happened was when I started working at RTD Financial Advisors, I worked for, and who is now the CEO of the company. At the time, he was the president of the company. He had a good book of business, and he had a more retirement plan business than any of the other advisors there. And I worked directly with him, and I realized that the plans were not being serviced at they needed to be serviced better. We were getting calls from employees. We were getting calls from plan sponsors that were based on their day-to-day management of their retirement plan itself.
Mm-hmm.
So I noticed a niche. Like, we need to create a servicing, department in our firm that is just strictly dedicated to helping these small businesses run and manage their retirement plan. So I remember at a time we even at RTD called it the quasi-retirement plan department because it really wasn't a department at the time.
Right, right.
But it started to take shape, and we realized that, you know, this is really helping our clients. And, you know, word of mouth spreads, you know what I mean, and catching on, and they really appreciated that someone was dedicated specifically to this industry. You know,
right.
And there are plenty of great advisors out there, but it's definitely a unique professional who really works with these types of clients.
Right. Okay. So what would you feel are the key factors in evaluating the best options when setting up a retirement plan for your business?
Okay. I'll just give the top three. Because okay. There's a lot of other key factors that come into play, but I think these are the main ones. I think the first thing that a business owner should ask themselves is, who is this benefit for? Okay?
Because, good question.
Right. A lot of times, you know, a person would say, oh, I want to set up a 401k plan, but they're a single business owner. Maybe they have one employee, you know, and this could be... It could be pricey, you know, it could be expensive. It depends on what it is and who that benefit is for. Some owners of companies establish plans specifically for themselves. I mean, not that it's not to enhance employees, but if I'm the only person in that business and I want to save for my retirement, yes, you can set up a plan for yourself. But now if you have employees, depends on what you're trying to do. You may be a business owner who maybe somewhere down the line you'll be transitioning, you'll be selling, and you need to establish some retirement security net for yourself somewhere down the line. So there's so many things to think about when establishing that plan and what you want to do down the line. You may start out with a very low-cost IRA or a simple IRA, and maybe down the line as the business grows, you may want to transition that into a 401k plan. But these things can happen. So I think that first question is, who is this benefit for? Is it for me? Is it for myself and my employees? Or is this strictly for my employees only, such as 403b plans in some regards? Those are set up and run by, you know, by the employees.
Okay.
The next factor would be, what can you afford? I kind of touched on that with the first one, is who the benefit is for.
Right.
What can they afford? Certain types of plans can be expensive to operate, not to mention the cost of funding the plan. So you have to understand what it is that you can afford to put towards setting up this plan. And then, finally, I would say servicing needs. What... do you need your providers or your vendors who are going to help you establish this plan? What services do they offer that are going to help you manage your plan effectively? So I think those are the key factors when a person is maybe setting up a plan. And even
right.
if you have an existing plan and you're transitioning or moving that plan to a new provider, these are the same questions you should be asking.
Okay. Can you elaborate more on the servicing needs? Like, what are the key things that servicing requests that you get from your clients?
Some things that they want to know is, will they process distributions online? Do they have any services that would help me maybe process the payroll? It could be just, you know, some of the day-to-day things. Will their system allow for me to store important documents? Will they distribute those documents to my participants? Will they get enrollment materials to my participants? Will they meet with my other providers and advisors and work well with them, you know, when we're reviewing the plan annually or periodically? So these are some of, you know, when I think about servicing needs, it's really like the administrative day-to-day tasks of managing the plan. What will they do? Will they generate 1099s?
Right.
For my plan? So it's so many different things, and there's a list that we can go through, but it depends on, again, what type of plan you have, and again, what with having that type of plan, what are you going to be required to do for yourself as the business owner, and also what you're going to be required to do for your employees?
Okay. Now, we know that there's a lot of new things that are coming out for 2017 surrounding 401ks, and I wanted you to address what should small businesses that have established retirement plans focus on now?
Absolutely. I think for the new year, I was going to start here first, but I guess I'll start with my second point that I wanted to make. I think what you want to do is determine the last time you actually reviewed your plan document. And I found this time and time again with new clients and existing clients that businesses change often, and
okay.
their needs and their goals will change as well. Does your plan still accommodate those needs? And it may be time, and if it doesn't, it may be time to make some amendments to your plan. So I think that that's something that's important, to definitely review the plan document. Also, to ensure, depending on, again, when I say plan document, that really speaks to more like 401k plans,
okay.
and 403b plans. You have a plan document. You want to make sure that your plan document has been restated to comply with the regulatory changes. So these are the things that a good third-party administrator, this is also another plan provider, can help you do.
Okay.
So I think that, I would say, is first. That's something that you should definitely focus on.
Okay.
That what goes along with having a good provider is also making sure you review your plan providers as well. Because,
okay.
again, with running a 401k plan, you might have a third-party administrator who does the back-office filing for your 5500, who actually is the person who drafted your document, who does your plan valuations, those kind of things. You know, you want to make sure that you are, you know, like this provider is doing all of the things that you need them to do, not to mention your actual record keeper.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of plans, you think, oh, all platforms are made the same. Not necessarily. Could there be a more competitive provider who
okay.
offers maybe that and maybe more services at a lower cost? So it's always good to kind of review who your providers are as well as your advisor. Is your advisor
right.
meeting your needs? Are they reviewing the investments? Are they meeting with you, with your employees? Are they providing additional services and education and things like that for your plan? So these are things that you should probably be doing. When I say review your plan document, not only that, review your plan providers as well. You know,
okay.
do a self-check.
Now, can it be common for the TPA and the record keeper to be the same entity?
Absolutely. But
Is that a good thing?
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting that you say that. And I have clients where they have bundled services. That's what we
mm-hmm.
call bundled, where you have a record keeper slash TPA all together. And if a plan is very low maintenance, that could be a more cost-effective way of providing servicing. So, yes,
okay.
in some regards, that may work out well. But if you have maybe a more complicated plan design, we do lean towards the more unbundled approach because you have specialist providers.
Okay.
You have TPAs who have, you know, who may actually be ERISA attorneys that really know the law. And they really understand plan design, and they can find little, you know, goodies and maybe a few little tweaks that could really make that a powerful plan. So
okay.
it really depends on what you're trying to accomplish with your plan. But if it's very low maintenance and you really don't have a lot going on and maybe you're looking for a low-cost maybe approach to start out with, maybe the bundled, you know, program can work for you. But
okay.
I always like to tell people, and I think years and years ago, I remember when I actually really carved out each role. Even when we say they're one and the same, like, okay, can they be the same person? Understand
right.
that your record keeper and your TPA have two distinct responsibilities. So it's really important to understand what they are, even if they're doing, if this company is saying they're providing you with both.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense. And actually sharing that with clients so that they see that even though that they're bundled, you want to make sure that these activities are done under the TPA umbrella, and then these other activities need to be taken care of under your record-keeping umbrella.
Right. And, for example, we have had a bundled plan where we've moved them from the bundled program to an unbundled because they were running into issues that they needed a more focused TPA that
mm-hmm.
could really help that plan, whereas the bundle program just couldn't do it. They just couldn't accommodate. And,
okay.
You know, for example, they put them kind of on a schedule, if you will, because they're handling thousands and thousands of other plans.
Right.
But with this more boutique-focused specialist TPA, they could treat that person like an individual. Like, we're going to handle these administrative tasks for you and really sit down and come to your office. And, you know, like, you can really touch and feel a person. It doesn't feel like you're working with just the system.
Okay.
So that's different.
Yeah. So I just wanted to come back to, and your role in this is actually helping your companies to determine who they need. Like, so kind of explain again your role in working with your small business owners.
Right. So for plan sponsors, that's a lot to understand. Okay, I have a role as a fiduciary to my plan, but I know that I'm maybe, let's think about this, I'm doing dental work. That's my primary business, you know.
Right.
Or I'm making tires, whatever it is. I'm a production company. So you have your main responsibilities, but then you have your employees and you have your benefits and all these other behind back office responsibilities. It's very hard for you, and being a plan sponsor, sponsoring a retirement plan can be a hefty task, and that's
right.
Why plan providers or business owners outsource that to these different providers to help them run it effectively. Having a specialist advisor, financial advisor, obviously you hire the advisor to choose and select the investments for your plan so that you can offer it to your employees. So that's mainly the primary function of an investment manager, and that's why most any financial advisor can pretty much take on a plan, because maybe the extent of their role is just to help you choose your investments.
Right. Right. Okay.
But right. So being a specialist advisor working with retirement plans, again, like I said, I came into this with an advisor who had worked with retirement plans for years and already had this book of business. So I learned from that, you know, from that direction, from that focus. We knew
okay.
about the basic things that you need to know about testing a plan, about a plan's design, about the different providers that you work with, and assisting our plan sponsors. And a lot of times they'll say, well, I work with all these different people. I don't know who to call. Well, that's who we are. We're their point of contact, and we develop and establish relationships with their other vendor providers. And in some cases, we stand right next to our plan sponsor helping them choose those vendor providers. And if at some time that provider is not helping that client where we see, or maybe they may be falling short, where the plan has grown and maybe they need a new program, we are in the position to suggest that to them, make that recommendation, and they rely on us to give us, you know, to help them get there. So we try to take that pain out of that for them and
mm-hmm.
make running their plan as seamless as possible. So as a specialist advisor, that's what you do. You not only choose the investments for them, you step in to help them educate their employees, get them enrolled in the plan, and help them with their management and operations of their retirement plans, you know, the day-to-day tasks that happen.
Okay. So now let's bring this conversation to you personally. So what do you feel has made you successful as an executive?
I would say that believing in myself first and foremost, and I know that sounds so cliche. Everybody says, oh, you got to believe in yourself. No, you really have to believe in yourself.
Right.
Know who you are. Okay? And once you can figure that out, like, I know who I am. I have a goal. I have this desire. And I had asked myself at one point in time, what are you going to set out to do? What is your life's purpose? I think
mm-hmm.
that's what it was. I asked, what is your life's purpose at one point? And it said, and I said, or whatever, wherever it came out of some magical place, and I said, It's to help others. And I had started to look at all of the things I had done in my life from the time I was a child up until adulthood, and I realized that I felt this really great feeling inside of myself when I was helping others, when I was doing things to make a difference in someone's world, life, whether I was working with a business owner and helping them get to the next level. Like, for me, that was gratifying. So I believed in myself, and I know who I am, and I know what my purpose is.
Wow, I love that too, because I totally identify with that, because I did the same thing. I asked about my purpose as well. So I am on the same page with you, and I don't think it's a cliche. I think we all need to, one, believe in ourselves and ask what our purposes are in being on this earth. What is it that we need to give, that is our responsibility to give back to the universe or to the world? So I don't think we're just here.
No, exactly. And I think that that's, like, as far as success is defined by each person differently.
Mm-hmm.
So one person could look at me and say, no, you're not successful to me, but this person is successful to me. And though I can feel this way about myself, but that person could not tell me that I was not successful. So that's why I say you have to believe in yourself. And I think that's where it begins. You can't let anyone tell you what success is. It's you knowing that, you know, knowing what success means to you.
No, I completely agree, and I totally identify with what you're saying. So based on your experience as a professional woman, what are some tips you can share to help others advance in their careers and expand their capabilities toward executive leadership?
Okay. I think that it's as simple as doing a self-assessment and physically writing it down. I started this exercise in my early 20s. I would keep a journal, and I still do to this day. But every now and then, I do a goals list.
Okay.
Right? So I write those things down, and I try to do short-term goals, like where do I see myself in the next year, in the next 5 years. And the reason why that's important is because mentally you always go back to those things that you said that you were going to do.
Okay.
And it's almost like it works universally in a way where you are magnetically drawn to what steps you need to take to get you there. I just believe that, and I will not, you can read as many self-help books as you want. I can tell you that they'll probably point you to focusing on your goals. I think that if that's what you want to do and you want to advance your career, think about maybe where there may be missing spaces that you may need to fill in. You got to write it down. If you want to be a professional swimmer, what would it take for you to get there? You have to swim 5 minutes longer every other day as you're practicing. Whatever it is, you'll know what it is to get you to that goal. So having it written down, with that, you'll begin to discover where there may be spaces you need to fill in. Is it more education? Is it surrounding yourself with the right people? And the answers to that will only come from within you. So definitely do that self-assessment. That's what I would recommend.
Okay. I like that. I'm sitting here and like, wow, I feel like we're in sync with one another, because these are the things that I practice as well. So I'm just sitting there like, yes, yes, yes.
Do the right thing.
Okay. So now let's get to the financial piece of this. What do you feel is the best financial decision you've made as a professional woman?
Well, you could probably guess what I'm going to say, being that I am a retirement plan specialist. And I would say contributing to my 401k and teaching others to do the same. And I'll tell you, and I always share this story, that, you know, I began working in RTD in 2004, and it was exciting, and I'm in the finance world. This is where I wanted to be, and I still love it here, but 4 years, it was great. We were on a ride up the hill. Investments were doing great. And then my real lesson came in 2008, 2009, when the market took a dive.
Yes.
That was my first, I said, wow, ooh, I don't like this a lot. And I got tons of phone calls, but I had the best mentors behind me, coaching me into how to understand this and how to help people through this tough time, because they had seen these times before then. They'd seen them.
Right.
No, oh, Mira, this is nothing new. But then I remember turning around and saying, because I was new in the business, I was
right.
like, I'm stopping my 401k contributions. I started to, let me tell you, other people started to affect my, you know, our clients. They were scaring me. I even had
right.
one tell me she was psychic. I was just losing it, okay?
Right.
So I sat with one of our leaders, our firm leaders, and he said to me, he kind of laughed, and he said, well, I would recommend. And he said it with a calmness, and I could still remember, but this is his personality. He's a great person. And he goes, well, maybe you should consider maybe scaling back if you feel that you maybe need to reduce it, but I wouldn't recommend that you stop it.
Mm-hmm.
And then he told me that, yeah, the market's at a discount. You're still working. If anything, you should be putting more money in.
Right.
You know? And
yes.
he was just very comfortable. I was like, no, the world's going to end, you know?
Right.
Right?
This is
the emotional part of investing that we deal with. And I deal
yes.
with, but it taught me such a valuable lesson. And so now I share that with others. But even me, being in the financial business, even found myself up against the reality of investing and the emotional side of it and learning how this works. And believe
right.
you me, I'm glad I kept doing that because I'm glad I kept contributing to my plan, because very soon thereafter, and you can remember this, Zanilia,
yes.
what did the market
yes.
do? Recovered.
Exactly.
It recovers so fast that if you
yes.
ever got out, it's very, very difficult to get back in on that,
uh-huh.
that ride up, you know?
Yes.
So, if you know, stopping is probably not a good idea if you're still working and you could still afford to contribute something, definitely not stopping, but I think that's the best financial decision I've made. And
okay.
over the years, I can see, based on my balance, that it becomes real money. This is a real
right.
thing, you
right.
know? And
right.
it's consistency and discipline.
Exactly. I had a friend share something with me recently, and I posted it over the weekend about how he was explaining growing money, and that it's like going up a hill and then coming down a hill. He said when you go, and he was explaining it to getting to your first $1 million, and he was saying when you're going up that hill, it seems hard because you're starting with a little and you're trying to build it and grow it. And he said once you get to the $1 million, he says going down the hill, and the going down the hill was reminiscent of it doubling.
Right.
So
right.
once you get on top of that hill and you start going down, it starts doubling faster because it's more money.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
You know, and I was like, that is such a great analogy.
I like that one. I'm going to use that one.
Yeah.
Too. I was trying to think of how to incorporate the snowball effect discussion into some
right.
of my conversations with
right.
people, because that's exactly what it is.
Exactly.
That's life. You know, life doesn't really change shapes in many different areas, and we could apply these same analogies to so many different parts of our life, you know?
Exactly,
so.
Exactly, exactly. Okay, so I don't know if my last question, I guess you kind of answered it, but are there any additional financial tips you would like to impart to professional women?
Yes. Oh, goodness. And I know that we're talking to professional women, but all women, every woman there, your daughters, especially if they're getting ready to head to college or they're in high school and they have a job, you know,
mm-hmm.
they need to learn early. So if you do have children, as a professional woman, if you have children, you know, educate them about some of their financial responsibilities today and also their financial responsibilities in the future. Some of the things that I would like to say is, take time to review your savings strategies. What are you doing? Do you have an emergency fund set aside? Let 2017 be a year where you actually take the initiative to really look at these areas of your life, and don't be afraid of it, because it can be very daunting and scary to look at it, especially if you're staring at debt. But there's ways to reduce that debt, but you have to be disciplined about that as well. And again, you know, professionals such as Zanalia, you know, you being a financial planner, and you have strategies and you do know ways to help people, you know, get to those goals in their life. So at least review what you're currently doing with your savings strategies. And if you have investments, typically if we have savings, it's mostly in our retirement plan accounts. Where are they located? Do you have plans that are hanging out there with other advisors from other employers that you don't even talk to anymore?
Right.
There's a lot of lost money out there because people didn't know that they were receiving employer contributions. And so there's money just hanging out there in your name and an IRA just sitting there, maybe there. You don't know.
Right.
But review that. Think about that. You know, do I have other investments that are kind of hanging out there? Can I consolidate them now into my new employer's plan?
Mm-hmm.
And finally, with your investments, review that with your either one financial professional, or if you have a retirement plan, there's typically a financial professional working with that plan to help you determine, are you taking the right amount of risk? And a lot of these questions, for one, they can come from the financial professional, but they may need to come from you as well. Are you taking the right amount of risk for your time horizon as well as your goals? Because we're two different. Like, Zanalia and I may be the same age, but maybe Zanalia may have a longer time horizon, or maybe Zanalia may have other ideas of what she plans on doing with her money somewhere down the line. So that's what makes us all individuals, like our fingerprints. So you really need to ask yourself that question. And if you have a professional working with you, absolutely ask them, you know, to help you. And read as much as you can about these things if you don't already know.
Yes. And, you know, and I'm going to do a plug. If you want to start reading something, you can be more than willing to purchase my book, Finance and Stilettos, Money Matters for the Well-Heeled Woman.
I love that book, and I actually shared that with another professional woman as well. So you can purchase it and give it as a gift as well. It's wonderful.
Okay. I appreciate that. It's the gift that keeps on giving.
It
that's what I like to say.
It is a wonderful, simple read. I would have to agree with you on that.
Well, you know, Amira, I truly enjoyed our conversation, and I appreciate you sharing this powerful information that I'm sure will help women striving to achieve great professional and financial success. So thank you again for taking time to talk to me today.
Thank you so much, Zanalia, for having me.